Hello everyone, this is Beverly Tomasian. I'm very excited to bring to you our advanced level program today, Pattern Management Gone Crazy. Today is an opportunity for us to look at a variety of patients and situations and try and determine what is the best insulin pattern management strategy available for this patient based on their unique characteristics. So we'll be taking a look at patients that I have met in real life. Of course, I've changed their names and their identity to protect who they are. And some of the case studies are more just combination of patients put together. So I think this is really helpful because real life is messy. Diabetes management is not black and white. There's a lot of factors and variables that we have to account for as we're trying to help our patients get to target. And so the goal of this program is to be really reality-based and say, in our practice with real patients, how do we help them reach targets and collaborating with the providers? And during this presentation, I'm going to be using the American Diabetes Association framework and different generally accepted insulin regimen rules to figure out insulin patterns. But you know, the main thing here is I'm a consultant to providers, and I see myself as a consultant who helps patients determine what are the best insulin choices for me and the best strategies to provide insulin. And I refer them to their provider and send this consultation and my recommendations to the provider for final determination of insulin management. So that's how I function. Some of you listening may have prescriptive authority and you can go ahead and make insulin changes. For me, I just look at what's happening with the patient and I consult the patient and provider and make my suggestions based on a lot of years of experience. And so a lot of this, you know, I've just gathered as I've been a diabetes educator for over 20 years and board certified in advanced diabetes management. So I see myself on the continuum providing education, but also providing self-management with medication direction for patients. That is, how can we improve your medications to help you achieve your target and also keep the patient in mind and what works for them and doesn't work for them. So pattern management gone crazy. What are the objectives? Well, we're going to talk about how do we incorporate the national guidelines into our practice? How do we explore the importance of patient assessment and determining realistic dosing strategies? We're going to discuss strategies to initiate and modify insulin, and we're going to keep a close eye on safety. And then we'll look at strategies to adjust basal bolus to achieve glucose control. And then we'll look at just making those adjustments to reach our target. And the goal of today is really how to think like a pancreas. And my ultimate question is always, what would the pancreas do at this moment to help get blood glucose to target? And we want to imitate in our best way possible the job that the pancreas does, and it makes look so easy. And if we take a look at physiologic insulin secretion, just as a reminder, let's just take a look at how the pancreas normally works. And here's the meal. You can see that after a meal, there's a glucose spike or a postprandial spike associated with mealtime intake of carbohydrate. And this particular person does not have diabetes because their post-meal blood sugar never goes above 140. And we'll also see that in relation to the food intake and the increase in blood glucose, the pancreas gets to work. And the pancreas squirts out that bolus insulin. And this is also, you know, termed sometimes first phase insulin release, where the pancreas just immediately squirts out that insulin to cover the carbohydrate. And you can see the insulin does lower blood sugar. So as the insulin levels increase, the blood sugars start to go down. And that's essentially how we keep blood glucose levels in check, by releasing the right amount of insulin to cover for the carbohydrate. And then you can see that blood sugars normalize in between meals. And again, we eat again and more bolus insulin is released. So if we don't have a functional pancreas, we run into trouble. This system isn't working. We eat food, the first phase insulin response is diminished or absent, and so the blood sugar levels go too high after a meal. And so we imitate with insulin what the pancreas would do. And as you know, the bolus insulins, and if you have your pocket card, you can take a look at those now. The bolus insulins include Novolog, Humalog, Apidra, and Regular. But in between meals, we also need to keep blood sugars in check. And you can see there's a basal level of glucose that our body requires to function. So even when we're not eating, our blood sugar is maintained, around 70 to 90-ish in that range. And how do we keep that from going too high? Well, our pancreas is still releasing insulin even when we're not eating. It releases it actually 24 hours a day, maybe about 0.5 units of insulin per hour. We call that our basal insulins. And the basal insulins are MPH, Levemir, Lantus. Those insulins, we're trying to imitate what the pancreas would be doing through these injections. And as you know, the MPH works for about a half a day, so we'll need to take that twice a day. And the other insulins, the other basal, Levemir and Lantus, work for an entire day. So once a day dosing is usually adequate. And so if our pancreas is fully functional, it releases bolus insulins with meals, and when we're hyperglycemic, it releases basal insulin in between meals and through the night, about 0.5 units an hour. But if we have diabetes, both the bolus is affected. We don't make that first phase insulin, and also we have a diminished basal response. And so with diabetes, blood sugars can go higher than normal. And so what we're trying to do in this situation is to, in this course, we're going to look at how do we imitate what the pancreas would do through insulin injections. But first of all, I have a poll question. And my first poll question is, which of the following are bolus insulins? And we have A, Lantus and Levemir, B, Novolog, Humalog, MPH, C, regular Novolog, Afrezza, D, insulin pens, or E, not sure. So let me go ahead and launch this poll. This is an easy one. We're just going to kind of get started with an easy poll and work our way up to, more challenging ones. And so the thing about not being able to see all of you is the best way for me to kind of interact is through these polls, so I really appreciate them. And it gives us a little chance to connect. So we're looking at which of the following are bolus insulins, the insulins that we would inject to imitate the pancreas release of insulin to cover food. To cover food, and that's what really a bolus insulin is. Okay, 100% of you have voted. I'm going to go ahead and close this and share with you. So 33% of you said Novolog, Humalog, and MPH. Well, it is true that Novolog and Humalog are bolus insulins. But NPH is a basal insulin. So B is not the right answer, but C is the right answer. Regular Novolog and Afrezza are all bolus insulins. So you may be wondering, what is Afrezza? Well, we're going to be getting to that, and Afrezza is inhaled insulin. Very exciting, newly released. So we'll talk more about that. So here we go, just to review what I just talked about. Bolus insulin lowers after meal glucose levels, and I think of the rabbit as the bolus insulin mascot, because the rabbit gets in, does its job, and hops back out. So who's my mascot for basal? Well, it's the turtle. And no particular rush to get started, hangs around for a half a day, an MPH, or a full day with Levemir and Lantus. So these two insulin action teams help imitate what the pancreas would do. So how do we tell how efficacious insulin is? How do we tell if it's working? Well, I have two targets here that I want to go over because the ADA has recently updated their targets for blood sugar. So how is the effectiveness of bolus insulin determined? Well, sometimes we'll ask our patients, can you get a 2-hour postprandial blood sugar? And let's see how well that insulin matched your food. But I put here if you can get it. The most luck I have getting postprandial blood sugars is at nighttime because it's after they eat, 2 hours after they have their last meal of the day, check your blood sugars. The target's less than 180. But if we use the before next meal blood glucose to see how well bolus is working, the target is different. It's 80 to 130. Last year it was 70 to 130. The ADA has increased it to 80 to 130 to improve safety for our patients. And so if I take a bolus insulin before breakfast, let's say I take some, 5 units of Apidra, I could either A, check my blood sugar after breakfast to see if it's less than 180, or I could check it before lunch. And if I check it before lunch, my target is 80 to 130. So that's how we determine how efficacious bolus insulin is. Now, how do we determine how effective basal insulin is? This is really so important. Basal insulin is reflected its efficacy in the fasting blood glucose. And this is really important in the hospital setting. I work in a hospital setting, and a lot of times we're having hypoglycemia in the morning around 5 a.m. And that morning hypoglycemia is not in response to the bolus insulin. It's in response to the lantus that's given the night before. And too much lantus or basal insulin can result in low fasting blood sugar. Sorry about that. So we really want to understand which insulins affect which blood sugars so we can make changes to improve blood glucose levels effectively. Now, this slide is important also because as I was writing this program and I was reflecting on it this morning, it's not just the glucose goal that we're thinking about, but also the A1C target. And what do we want to help our patients achieve as far as A1C? And this is from the American Diabetes Association. An adult non-pregnant A1C goal less than 7 is reasonable for most people. But look at this. It says less than 6.5 may be appropriate for those without significant risk of hypo or other adverse effects of treatment. And I think really importantly is look at this. Less than 8% A1C may be appropriate for those with hypoglycemia, frail, elderly, those with long-standing diabetes and vascular complications. So this number also informs us how strict do we want to be, how regimented, how flexible, and how complex or simple we want our insulin regimen to be. This also comes into the decision-making factor. So the approach depends on patient. I love the internet. There's so many cool pictures out there. But does our patient lean and tall and not with much extra fat? Or is our patient a little heavier with more visceral adiposity? Because the real truth is here, insulin dosing is relative to body weight. So if you walked into this patient's room on the right, the leaner guy with 10 units of regular insulin before a meal, we know just by looking at him, that's probably way too much. But if you walked into this guy's room, the heavier gentleman, and you had 3 units of regular insulin before a meal, he would laugh and say, that's not going to do anything. So we understand that insulin is relative to body weight, insulin dosing. But it's not just body weight, it's also kidney function. So I always ask, what is the creatinine? Because if the patient has a creatinine above 1.4, we know that they're at higher risk for hypoglycemia. The kidneys clear insulin, and if the kidneys are not working good, insulin stays around in the bloodstream longer and can cause hypoglycemia. What other medications are they on besides insulin? Are they on, metformin? Are they on a GLP? Are they on other medications that will help lower their blood sugar? And are they on steroids? Because steroids are going to increase insulin resistance. What is their activity level? Are they sitting at home and not really moving that much? I had a patient, she said, I am so proud. I walk at least a mile a day, throughout her whole day. So, I'm like, that's really great, but let's see if we can kind of increase your activity a little bit more. Or are they very active and walking 5 miles a day? Or are they just moving around and standing throughout the day because of their job? And so that is going to factor into insulin dose and also social support. Do they live alone? Are they struggling with depression? Are they having other issues, financial? Are they drinking or, taking drugs to self-treat, maybe some emotional things that are happening in their lives? That informs us too. What are the goals of care? What is realistic for them? And what is their ability and their willingness? I'm always asking my patients, this is what I'm thinking, but do you think that you're able to do that? Is that realistic for you? Would you be willing to do that? So I'm constantly asking permission. And so we're factoring in all these factors into our decision-making process, and we're also looking at their body weight and their type of diabetes. So this is a really nice chart because it looks at what type of diabetes they have and their units of insulin per kilogram per day. So we really do base insulin dose on their body weight and their type of diabetes. So if you look over here, type 1 diabetes, their insulin dosing is less. They can go from 0.25 to 1 units of insulin per kilogram per day. But most of them hang out right around here, 0.4, 0.5 units of insulin per kilogram per day. That's because type 1s aren't insulin resistant. They are insulin sensitive. We don't need to overcome resistance with them. We just need to replace the insulin they don't make. But look at our type 2s. The curve is, pushed over a standard deviation. Type 2s anywhere from 0.75 units a day to 2 units a day, with the average being around, maybe 1.5 or something like that. So our type 2s require more insulin because A, they're usually heavier. 95% of patients with type 2 diabetes are overweight, and they are more insulin resistant. So insulin replacement is on a continuum. There are other patients who are maybe morbidly obese or have other conditions where they require enormous doses of insulin. We're not going to talk about that group today. We're kind of stay in where we find most of our patients. So now I have another poll question for you. What best describes inhaled insulin? Is it liquid insulin that is aerosolized? Is it powdered long-acting insulin? Is it insulin that is inhaled via a pipe? Or is it regular insulin in powdered form? So let me go ahead and launch this poll. And take your best guess. Okay, thank you for all your voting, everyone. I appreciate it. Okay, I'm going to take one more second. So just choose something. It's okay if you don't know, because if you all knew all the right answers, then you wouldn't need to be at this class. So not knowing is okay at this class because we're going to share this information with you. So some of you said liquid insulin that is aerosolized. Some of you said powdered long-acting insulin, but 75% of you chose the right answer, which is regular insulin in powdered form. So let's go take a look at that, because this is really exciting technology. Afrezza inhaled insulin was approved late in 2014 for type 1 or type 2. It was studied in adults over 18, not indicated during pregnancy or while breastfeeding. But here you can see the curve. Here's the Afrezza compared to insulin lispro. So this is injected, this is inhaled. So you can see the Afrezza, the inhaled, gets in really quickly. It's in, it enters the alveoli and the bloodstream very rapidly, but you can see it has a little bit less of a tail. So it's going to leave the body more rapidly and be metabolized. So that's just something to keep in mind for our patients. So you get a, it really does match first phase insulin response, but it's not going to leave that lingering insulin that some of the other bolus insulins do. So how much will it cost? Well, they're thinking it's going to be similar to the pricing of pens, and it is regular human insulin in powdered form. So it's regular insulin that they made small enough to be aerosolized and absorbed in the alveoli. And if you ever see it in papers, they often call it T1, technosphere insulin. So it's a bolus insulin inhaled before meals. So you still would need the long-acting basal insulin, and it comes in 4 and 8 unit cartridges. And so the benefit of this insulin versus we had another powdered insulin maybe a decade back is this one actually converts 1-to-1 ratio with insulin dose. But since it is absorbed through the lungs, we do need to do a lung function study, and this is forced expiratory volume, and make sure that the patient has adequate lung function. And it's definitely not for patients with chronic lung issues, COPD, asthma, lung cancer, smokers. And definitely for this group of high-risk patients, it has a risk of causing acute bronchospasm, black box warning. So really not intended for this group of people. Major side effects, hypoglycemia, sore throat, and some cough. But less hypoglycemia and less weight gain than injected insulin. And so here's the inhaler. It's very small. It's like the size of a whistle. And this is really, I think, a benefit for our patients. It's very discreet, easy to use, and you don't wash the inhaler. You replace it every 15 days. So here's the cartridge. You put it in, you close it, and then I have a picture. Then you put that into your mouth. And well, before you put it into your mouth, you exhale, put the device in your mouth, take the deepest breath possible, hold as long as you can, and then you exhale. And that's the inhalation. But I just want to talk a little bit about the dosing. And so it comes in 4-unit cartridges or 8-unit cartridges. And so there's no in between. The blue is 4, the 8 is green. So they've tried to color code it. And it says here, if you take up to 4 units, well, of course, you use the 4 units. So that means if you take 3 units, you have to use the 4 units. If you take up to 5 to 8 units, you're going to use the green one, the 8 unit. If you take 9 to 12 units, you're going to have to, you know, take 2 inhalations, a blue and a green. So this is the chart that appears in their package insert as far as dosing. And so what I'd like to do, since this is a program on pattern management, is let's just look at some patient situations and figure out how much Afrezza would we give them based on their particular situation. So we know with Afrezza it's 4 units or 8 units. So let's take a look at this first scenario. A patient takes 7 units of Humalog at meals and 20 units of Lantus at bedtime. How much Afrezza would we give them? What would be their dose? Well, if we look at that chart, we'd have to do 8 units, right? 8. Okay, let's just think about this for a minute. What if that patient is type 1? Would 8 units be too much for them? They usually take 7 units. Could they go to 8 and not get hypoglycemia? So this is what we have to start thinking about, because maybe 8, maybe they're very insulin sensitive, and they, from injections, if they take one extra unit, it really crashes them. And so we're going to need to consider this. So maybe for that patient, you know, that's sensitive type 1, or maybe type 1 with a blood sugar of 67. I mean, they're not going to want to take 8 units of Humalog. I mean, I'm sorry, 8 units of the Afrezza, that might just be too much. So maybe they take 4 before the meal, and then they eat and take 4 again after. So we're going to have to really help patients think through this before we share it with them and just kind of leave them on their own. But let's think about, what if I have type 2? If I have type 2, you know, type 2s are less insulin sensitive. So certainly they could take the 8 units and they would probably be fine. But what if even a type 2 had a blood sugar of 67? Could he take 8 units? Probably okay, because type 2s make enough glucagon so they don't get severe hypoglycemia. But if it's a lean type 2, I'm a little bit nervous about that. Let's take a look. What if their blood sugar is 170? So for type 1, they're going to take Afrezza 8 units and their blood sugar is 170. We're feeling okay about that. And a type 2 also, 8 units would be safe. So that's what I just kind of did on this next slide. I went through just thinking about this from different perspectives. Let's do one more together. What about 5 units regularly at breakfast and dinner and 10 units of Detemir? That's their normal dose. How do we translate the Afrezza for them? Well, if they're type 1, they could take the 4 units. It's probably okay. They might have to cut back on their carbohydrate a little bit. But would we say to the type 2, take 8 units? That's what the recommendation says. So, you know, that might be just too much insulin for that patient with type 2. So maybe we could also say, why don't you try the 4 units and try and eat a little bit less carb? But what if their blood glucose is 67? Well, for the type 1 or type 2, the 4 units would be great. What if their blood glucose is 170? Well, a type 1, you know, I don't know. I would not feel that comfortable saying take 8 units of Afrezza. But the type 2, we might be able to get away with it based on the patient, their body weight, their insulin sensitivity. So you can take a look at the other ones I've listed for you and kind of work those out on your own. And then I put my answers, what I was thinking. So that would be kind of some homework that you could take a look at. Hopefully we'll see the Afrezza out in the next few months. And hopefully we'll be seeing it be distributed. So patients are going to start asking us these questions, and we just really want to think through for each individual patient what would be a good match for them. Okay, let's talk a little bit more about pattern management now. And I have another poll question for you. When looking at glucose patterns, which problem do you fix first? Is it A, hyperglycemia, B, hypoglycemia, C, noncompliance, D, legible writing, or E? I'm not really sure about that one. So what do we want to figure out when we look at glucose patterns? A patient brings that logbook in. What are we honing in first with? All right, you guys are on fire. Absolutely. I'll give you one more second to vote. I'm going to go ahead and close this poll. Most of you have voted, and 100% of you got this right, hypoglycemia. So that's always the case, because hypoglycemia is what we call the limiting factor. And if the blood sugars are running too low, we immediately have to pull back on the insulin. And so you could say, well, Bev, if the blood sugars are running too low, we should maybe have them eat more. But if your blood sugars are low and you eat more, you gain weight. So we always want to try and pull back on insulin if we can. I mean, my goal when working with patients is to give them the least amount of insulin necessary to get blood sugars to target. Because, as you know, people on insulin are very afraid of weight gain and hypoglycemia. So I make a contract with them, you know, like a personal contract. I don't write this down, but I always say, I'm going to work with you so we get you on the right amount of insulin, and we're going to really work toward getting you on the least amount of insulin you need to achieve your blood glucose targets. And I think that's very reassuring for patients from a weight management perspective and also prevention of hypoglycemia. So pattern management, safety first, evaluate 3-day patterns. We want to fix hypoglycemia, if possible, decrease medication dose, and of course we're always looking for, when did you eat last, what about your activity, what other medications could be influencing your blood sugars. So we're looking at all these different factors, but normally if we're seeing chronic lows, we've got to get that medication dose down. What if they do exercise a lot? We want to match the insulin to their exercise patterns. What if they're trying to eat less? Let's cut the insulin down to match what they're eating. Okay, after we fix low, we go ahead and we fix high. We want to identify patterns, and I do have here, we want at least 3 days worth of patterns. So we're always asking our patients, please, can you, you know, keep a journal of your blood sugars, or can you download it to your computer, or you can download it to your computer in the office. But we need to see those at least 3 days of patterns to make a good decision about what's happening. And it says here under hyperglycemia, before increasing insulin, make sure you're not missing something else, like, are they eating extra carbs? Are they exercising less? Are they skipping their insulin? Very important, because many times patients tell us what we want to hear, and maybe they're not able to take their insulin like they intended to. So providing them a lot of permission to be honest with us. We're not going to judge you. We just want to know what's happening so we can help and partner with you to do the right thing. And, you know, a lot of times when I'm working with patients, well, actually almost all the time, you know, I refer to them as the expert. Nobody knows your body better than you. Nobody knows what works better than you. I'm here to support you, coach you, help you make those changes that you need to make, but really acknowledging their expertise in their own body, I think, is so critical. So let's take a look at this guy. He's very friendly. I love this picture of him. It's, of course, not the real patient, but it's just such a lovely picture. He's 68 years old. He's an avid walker. His BMI is 24. So we know he's, you know, not overweight. His BMI is within normal weight range. His weight is 90 kilograms, so he must be pretty tall. And his A1C is 9.6. And during the past few months, his blood sugar during the day has been 270s. Wow. He's on insulin, 40 units of Lantus, and he's on glyburide and metformin. Those are his oral medications. So let's just ask a question. What medication change does he need right off the bat? Well, I'll just tell you, and I'll show you some of the algorithms some slides down the road. But when you look at the ADA algorithm for diabetes, what they generally say is, if they're on insulin, stop sulfonylureas. And as you know, the glyburide is a sulfonylurea. Now, they say to stop the sulfonylurea because sulfonylureas plus insulin can exacerbate the risk of hypoglycemia. And there was a study done recently, and I have it, I'll make sure and put it on your resource page, where it showed that sulfonylureas plus insulin increase mortality. So wherever I can, if I'm finding patients on these combinations, I alert their provider and I suggest that we stop the sulfonylurea. Anyways, they do the same thing. Sulfonylurea tells the pancreas to squirt insulin. Insulin is insulin. And so it's really a redundancy in addition. Whereas we would maintain the metformin, because metformin has a different type of action. Metformin decreases insulin resistance and really helps us to use the minimum amount of insulin. So if you stop the metformin, insulin needs go up because insulin resistance increases. So the ADA and the American Association of Clinical Endocrinology say if you start insulin, keep metformin. It's really an important piece of information. So what medication change? Well, dump the glyburide. What insulin change? Well, obviously, we're not giving him enough insulin because on 40 units of Lantus, his A1C is still above the target. And what is his target? We talked about A1C target. He's an avid walker. He's 68 years old. He really is involved in his health. And so, you know, I talked to him and I've said, you know, what do you want to get your blood sugars to? And he's like, I really want my A1C less than 7%. And I think that's very reasonable for him. He's got, you know, good social support, and he's very interested in his diabetes management, and he doesn't have a lot of other comorbidities. Okay, so when insulin changes, we'll get to that in a minute, but look at this. He does have a big insurance copay, and he was saying to me, you know, the Lantus is kind of expensive. I can afford it, but I can't afford, you know, another expensive medication. And so that was heavy on my mind as I was thinking about what would be the next step for him. So let's go to the next slide and take a look at what his blood sugars are doing. So here he is, he's 90 kilograms, A1C 9.6, he's on metformin, glyburide, Lantus started. And so, you know, I really appreciate the providers on their own, before the patient actually came to our office, noticed like these blood sugars are really high, so they started them on Lantus and they increased it, and they went to 10 units, and then the morning blood sugars come down. So, you know, nighttime basal or daytime basal, we always look to see how well it's working by evaluating our fasting. And then they went up to 20 units of Lantus, the morning blood sugar went to 180, 30 units, 160, 40 units, he's running 130. So we know we got his fasting, you know, close to target, because the target is 80 to 130 in the morning, so it's still a little bit up. But look at the daytime blood sugars. So this is a problem a lot of times that I see in my practice, where the patient started on basal insulin, but their blood sugars are running high during the day, and that is not being addressed. So he comes to our office, and the provider is saying, you know, help us out here. We're trying to get this blood sugar down. And so what is our next step? Looking, I'm sure you are having some thoughts right now about what we need to do. And if we're thinking like a pancreas, obviously this patient needs some bolus insulin, right, to get those blood sugars during the day down. But let's do a little differential and think about, is there any other strategies that we can use to help get his blood sugar to target? And here's, you know, the couple. You can see he's got good social support. So his wife comes in with him, and this, as I've mentioned, this is not a real patient. I'm just talking about a patient that is kind of a combination of patients in my practice. But he's got good social support, and so we can keep moving forward. But he's limited on finances. So would we start at a GLP-1 agonist? Actually, the ADA says if the patient's on insulin and blood sugars are above target, consider a GLP-1. So if you have your pocket cards with you, you can look on the back, and it talks about injectables that lower glucose, and those include exenatide, liraglutide, albiglutide, and dulaglutide. Those are all our GLP-1s. We have a lot of them now, four of them. But we can't start those because they're expensive, and that would be too much out of pocket for him. How about an SGLT2 inhibitor? Those are on the purple card, the orals, and SGLT2 inhibitors are the glucuretics. They help your kidneys release more sugar and water, and they really do help lower blood sugars, but it's a new medication, too expensive. What about the DPP-4 inhibitors? Those are like the Januvia, Onglyza. Well, those, I'm not even that interested in those besides cost, because they only lower the blood sugars, you know, maybe about 0.5 A1C. And so probably won't get them out of that 9 range, 9 A1C, and it's expensive. So we're not going to use any of these. We're going to stop the glyburide. We talked about why. And we need to improve insulin therapy. So number one, always, always, we look at lifestyle. Is there anything else he can do? This guy's an avid walker. He's walking 3-4 miles a day. So it's not really exercise that he's lacking. He's not overweight. And so when I see the people that aren't overweight, I always refer them to a dietitian and for education, but I'm thinking it's probably not the food that's getting him into trouble, but we will evaluate his carbohydrates. I just have the sense that his pancreas is not making enough insulin. His pancreas is asking for help. That's what I see with this guy. And he's got that great support system. And so what I'd like to do now is look at the ADA algorithm to kind of inform us of what is our next step. And this is very small in your PowerPoint handout, but I did put a link in your resources where it's a one page of this where you can take a close look. So what they say here is start with basal insulin, but look at usually with metformin. So keep the metformin, add the basal insulin. Start with 10 units a day, and that's what the provider did. They went 10, 20, 30, 40. They increased it over the month and adjust 10 to 15% or 2 to 4 units once to twice weekly to reach fasting blood glucose target. This is really important. If they do get hypoglycemic, you want to determine and address the cause. And if they do get hypoglycemic in the morning, decrease the basal by 4 units or 20%. 4 units or 20%. It says 10 to 20, but I just say 20%. Okay, now look at this. If not controlled after fasting blood glucose target is reached, our guy is right around there, right? He's on 40 units and his fasting blood sugar is in the 130s. He's really close. Or look at this. If dose exceeds 0.5 units per day, per kilogram per day, treat PPG stands for postprandial glucose excursions. That means hyperglycemia during the day with mealtime insulin. But look what it says here. Consider GLP-1. Those are that, you know, exenatide, liraglutide trial. That we couldn't do. But are we at, sorry about that. Sometimes my computer just has a mind of its own. Are we at 0.5 units of basal per kilogram per day? He's at 90. He weighs 90 kilograms. 90 times 0.5 is 45 units. He's on 40 units of Lantus, so he's right at the cusp. So now we need to go to our next strategy. And there's one that they point out here, add rapid insulin injection before largest meal. How much? 4 units or 10% of basal. So let's think about this. So we could say at his largest meal, add 4 units of insulin, bolus, or 10% of his basal. So he's on 40 units of basal, what's 10% of 40? 4 units. Okay, and then you increase by 1 to 2 units or 10 to 15% once to twice weekly until we reach our target. And then, of course, if there's low blood sugar, decrease the dose. So that's one choice. Or we could go to pre-mixed insulin twice daily. And we'll talk about this more in a future slide. And that is you could put them on 70-30 twice a day, two-thirds in the morning or one-third in the p.m. or 50% here. So those are our two choices. We're here. We've reached, I just enlarged that, we've reached this point where we're at. If we keep increasing the basal, we're at too much basal. And I'm sure in your practice you see this happen a lot where the patients are on high doses of basal, their A1C is still high, they're gaining weight, and they're not achieving their blood glucose control. So this, I love this algorithm. I've been talking about it a lot because it gives us a parameter and it gives us some concrete evidence to share with our providers to say, you know what, they're at the 0.5 level of basal. Let's think about another therapy. Let's move on to the next step. And so I'm just going to talk about this, what I've been talking about in this slide. Insulin, he's at the max basal dose is 45 units, 90 times 0.5, that was the max basal. He's at 40 units now, so he's really close. We could go up a little bit if we wanted to, but we know we're at the reaching the maximum basal dose. So the next step is what I showed you is to add bolus insulin or switch to 70-30. And we discuss it with the patient, and he says, you know what, I really want to stay on my Lantus. Can we just add one more bolus insulin injection during the day? So he decided to add regular insulin to his largest meal, and I have an asterisk. Why do we choose regular? Well, it's the cheapest. He could afford it. I have a slide coming up on that. And just like the algorithm said, we're going to do 4 units, or we could do 10% of basal, which is 4 units. Now we have to figure out when is his largest meal. And when they say largest meal, it's really the most carbs. But before I move on to largest meal, I just want to show you the slide that I love to show because in my community, I was having a lot of patients with huge copays or cash pay who couldn't afford the insulin. So I called to different pharmacies in Northern California to find out their price differential for insulins, and I was really shocked. But I was also pleasantly surprised with Walmart, and I have no stock or no conflict of interest in any stores or any. I have no stocks or any conflict at all. So just to let you know that I have no pharmaceutical investment. So Walmart offers a Reliant version of regular MPH and 7030 insulin for $25 a bottle. Reliant is a Novo Nordisk product that they make in quantities for Walmart. And so, wow, what a great deal. So we know that he could just buy cash pay a bottle of regular insulin, which will last him a month for $25. But any of these other newer insulins, that way we call them analogs, Humalog, Novolog, Apidra, you can see if he was cash pay or he had to pay a deductible, it could be a lot of money out of pocket. So that's why we chose the regular insulin for him. And so now we want to do is find his largest meal of the day. So we have to assign that 4 units of regular insulin to his largest meal based on carbohydrates. So here's what he has for breakfast. Big bowl of oatmeal with walnuts, banana, and coffee. So you might be counting carbs in your head right now, and you're saying, well, I don't know what a big bowl means. We're going to have to quantify that with the patient. For lunch, he has a sandwich and a piece of fruit, a few cookies around 3 p.m. Dinner, he has a big salad, barbecued meat, dinner roll, glass of wine. That looks delicious. And late night snacks. He has peanut butter on celery, nuts, and cheese. So I want to ask you all a question, just kind of looking at that. Which do you think is his largest meal from a carb perspective? What would you say is the time of day where we want to give that 4 units of insulin? So in your handout, the original handout, I put a bowl of oatmeal on on the slide here. It says a big bowl. So I just want to point out that big bowl of oatmeal. Okay. This is kind of just a question for fun because I'm not sure if there's a right answer. But this was happens all the time when we're working with patients as they're trying to figure out, based on their history, what is the right answer. So I'm going to go ahead and close that poll and share with you. So 57% of you said breakfast, 30% of you said lunch, and 14% of you said breakfast or lunch. And I kind of have to agree with D. It could be breakfast or lunch. We need more information. But I'll just tell you my experience, and that is people tend to be more insulin resistant in the morning. And that's just maybe because around 4 a.m. we release, cortisol and growth hormone. And it seems generally in the morning people need a little bit more insulin to get those blood sugars down. So I tend to dose a little bit higher in the morning if I have to make a choice between the two. And then if the morning comes down, lunch comes down. And if lunch comes down, dinner comes down. So it has this kind of natural domino effect. Okay. So I'm just making sure that everybody can hear me. I'm looking good on my end, so just making sure you can all hear me still. Let's see. You are back. Okay, good. Helen, I'm glad to hear I'm back. Okay. Let's keep going. Okay. So we already did this one. And so what I was saying is that generally speaking, kind of looking at the patient and the situation, I would usually assign the bolus insulin to breakfast if there's a choice between the two. The other reason I want to be honest with you, a lot of times people are really busy during lunch. They're out and about and they're working or and a lunch is a hard time to get insulin in for a lot of patients. So breakfast seems like a more regimented time of day, and I say you wake up, you check your blood sugar, take your insulin and eat. And that seems to kind of flow with their day a little bit better. So those are my biases, and each of us as educators, we have our own biases. So I bring to the table my life experience with diabetes, and you bring to the table your life experience, and the patient brings their life experience, and the provider brings theirs. You see, so we're all kind of integrating our experiences plus what the patient shows us at this moment. But anyways, here's the situation now. So we did start the 4 units of regular at breakfast. And let's just take a look for patterns. Are we seeing any low blood sugar that we're worried about? Well, interestingly enough, look at morning. It went from 130s to 120s to 100s. This is, and by week 4, it's down to the 80s. And this is what I find as we start replacing insulin and getting blood sugars closer to target, sometimes overall blood sugars come down. And we're certainly seeing this with this patient. And so just keep an eye on patterns by day, but also over time by looking at it from both perspectives throughout each individual day, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, but also each individual meal. And so what we did right here is we decreased the Lantus to 35 because we saw that was just too much Lantus and he was going down too low. But let's just take a look at lunch. So we're giving 4 units at breakfast, and his lunch came down to 190. We gave, and so we increased it. Remember, it said you can increase it 1 to 2 units weekly based on what the blood sugar is. And then we look on week 2. We went up to 5 units, and the lunch came down. Sorry about that. We went to 5 units. The lunch came down to 170s. So we went up to 6 units on week 6. Lunch came down to 150s, and by week 4, we're at 7 units, and the lunch is down to 130s. So our target for lunch is 80 to 130, so we feel like we're really close to where we need to be at that 7 units. Okay, so we've kind of have breakfast, blood glucose is at our target, lunch is close to target. What is our next issue here? Dinner. Dinner is still a little bit above target. Our target is 80 to 130. Let's look at bedtime. Is bedtime at target? The target at bedtime is 110 to 180. Yeah, he's always in target at bedtime. That's not an issue for him because he eats a lot of salad at dinner. He has salad and very low carbohydrate. He has some wine at dinner time. So we know that he doesn't probably need insulin at dinner, but he probably might need some insulin, sorry about that, at lunch if we want to take it to the next step. Okay, so now what I'm going to do is just do a different formula. So we use the ADA algorithm, but now I want to kind of get a perspective on what his insulin needs truly are using the basal bolus method. And this looks at if we're to replace insulin therapy using 50% basal and 50% bolus, how much insulin would he need? So let's just do an example. His weight is 90 kilograms. So you say 90 times 0.5, he needs about 45 units of insulin per day. And I use this formula a lot when I meet with new patients to see where they're at with their insulin. So interesting, isn't it? Because he's on 35 at nighttime of Lantus and 7 in the morning. So he's at 42 units. So he's close to what he needs. But the way it's split up isn't quite right. And so then I would say, well, he needs about 50% of it should be basal. So his total need for the day is 45 units. Half of that should be basal, which would be half of 45 is, well, you can't really divide it. It's 22.5. So we say it's 23. So that would be 23 every day of Lantus or glargine. You see, he's at 35. So now I'm getting some different information using this formula that maybe he's getting more basal than he needs. And his bolus dose would be the other 22 units, and that's about 7 units per meal. And so we're at 7 already for breakfast, but I know that he doesn't need 7 at dinner, you know, before dinner. That would be too much. But he could use some at lunch. So this formula doesn't match him exactly, but it's informing us of one thing, and that is maybe he's getting too much basal at night, and maybe we want to pull back a little bit on that basal and see if he could take less and still keep his blood sugar to target. And so what we did in this example is we decreased the lattice from 40 down to 25. And so if I ever have an opportunity, I will cut back on basil to see how much basil do they really need. And I always look at their body weight. And with this patient, remember how his blood sugars in the morning kept going lower and lower and lower? So we did decrease the basal to 25 units. And then I saw that his morning blood sugars were okay. They went up a little bit initially, but they still met the target range. And eventually they went down into the hundreds. So we kept this at 7 units of regular in the morning. And then we did add the 4 units of regular at lunch. And when we added that 4 units of regular at lunch and we asked the patient, are you able to do that? Is that reasonable for you? We did see that his dinner blood sugars are in target, you know, almost 100% of the time. Or, you know, there's fluctuations here, but I'm just giving you the average. And then look at his nighttime blood sugar. It's running really well. So just by making these simple adjustments, we can really help patients achieve their target and have a lot more a feeling of mastery and self-control over their diabetes. And this is what we do as diabetes educators and consultants, is we look at patients' blood sugars, see where they are, and see how we can make adjustments in the insulin to get them closer to target and still maintain safety. And you can see by making these changes, his A1C now is 7.6. So now that I'm looking at this, I'm thinking, okay, this guy is at a steady state with his blood sugars and his insulin. Now we might be able to teach him some carb counting to say, you know what, if you're going to eat extra carbs, maybe take an extra unit. If you're going to eat less carbs, you know, cut back a unit. Or if your blood sugar is low, cut back a unit. Or if it's running high, take an extra unit. So he's ready now for more intensive insulin guidance once we got him there. Okay, let me go to the next slide and see what's happening. Oh, so I want to give you a chance to try this 50-50 rule. So the 50-50 rule says people need about 0.5 units of insulin per kilogram per day, and then you give half of it as basal and half of it as bolus, and you divide the bolus dose by 3 meals. So just take a minute to fill in the blank, and we'll go from there. Fill in the blanks, then I'm going to ask you a poll question. The patient weighs 80 kilograms. Based on the 50-50 rule, what would be the bolus dose each meal? So I'm going to go ahead and launch a poll and see what you came up with. All right, 30% of you have voted. Good job, you guys. This formula has helped me so much. I'll use it all the time to evaluate where they are with their insulin and where they could be. It guides me in the direction I need to go, because it really is a formula that helps us think like a pancreas. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and close this poll. Thank you, everyone, for voting. So 70% of you have voted, and 86% of you chose the right answer. 6 to 7 units. So let's go over that together. How do we get that result? So what we said is 80 times 0.5, this patient needs 40 units of insulin per kilogram per day. Half of that is the basal dose, 20 units. So that's the glargine, the detemir, the MPH. The other half is the bolus dose, the other 20 units. So now you have to divide the 20 units by 3 meals. And you can't divide 20 by 3. It's 7, 6. It's 7, 7, and 6. So you can, that equals 14 plus 6 is 20. And so generally we would say, you know, we know it's somewhere between 6 and 7. And we'd usually assign the most insulin, most bolus to the biggest meal of the day, and then kind of go from there assigning the insulin. But listen, guys, you don't need to give them bolus at every meal, just like this patient. You could just start at the largest meal and give it to them then. And then if you need to add on some at lunch, you could do that, or dinner time. It really depends on the patient. This just gives us a framework, a structure. But what if they have type 1 diabetes? Yes, they need bolus insulin at every meal. So type 1s absolutely would need bolus at every meal, but our type 2s don't. They don't always need to take 4 injections a day. Sometimes they can get away with Lantus or a basal plus 1 injection of bolus or 2 injections of bolus. Everybody is different in the way they need insulin. So we want to base it on their patterns, on their ability, and on their willingness. All of that is really important. Let's take a look at our next patient. So this is based on a true patient of mine. This patient was very feisty. She has dementia, and her husband is her primary caretaker, so she's feisty and a little bit uncooperative, I would say, but still had the ability to draw up her own insulin. I observed her do it and check her own blood sugars and write it down. But her husband had to be very involved in overseeing all of this. So Nancy is 78 years old on 4 injections a day. Her A1C is 9.3. Her BMI is 27, so we know she's a little bit overweight, and her weight is 70 kilograms. So again, this patient is not on target. So anytime I just read this, 78 years old, 4 injections a day, I know that when 4 injections a day, we should be having better results. Okay, that's just number one. If a patient's on 4 injections a day and their A1C is 9.3, I know something is broken. They should be on 4 injections a day and having a great A1C. But speaking of that, what is her A1C target? She's 78, she has some dementia, we're worried about low blood sugar, her husband's a primary caregiver. So maybe her A1C target is not 7 like our last patient. Maybe we want to just get her below 8, maybe towards 7.5, because we want to err on the side of safety. But what's happening now is not acceptable, because you all know that a blood sugar above, I mean, high blood sugars make dementia worse. So we definitely know there's a link between hyperglycemia and dementia and hyperglycemia and Alzheimer's. So when I look at this picture, I'm thinking, gosh, I really want to get the blood sugars down to help improve her mental clarity. That's really important too. Checks blood sugars 3 to 4 times a day, keeps a log. And here's her insulin dose. So she's just on a straight insulin dose, 5 units of Apidra at each meal, which is a bolus, and 6 units of Lantus at bedtime. The husband is frustrated. He's telling me, blood sugar is always above 200, and I don't know how to adjust the insulin. The doctor just tells me to increase it, but he doesn't know how to increase it. So the patient's husband is asking me for very specific help, and I want to provide that for him. But first, before we provide the help, I want to do a little mental calculation. How much insulin should she be on? What would match her based on her body weight? She weighs 70 kilograms, so using our 50-50 formula, we take 70 times 0.5. She needs 35 units a day, half of that basal. Well, what's half of 35? 17.5, so we round up to 18. And the other half would be bolus. So 17 divided by 3 meals approximately is 6 at breakfast, 6 at lunch, and 5 at dinner. Well, interestingly, she's on 5 every meal. So her bolus seems close, but what is really lacking? Her basal. She's only on 6 units of basal. So I'm not sure why that basal dose was so low, but already just by doing this formula, I'm questioning why that basal is only at 6 units. Okay. Some other issues during our interview. In the morning, the patient injects insulin at 6 a.m. and eats at 8 a.m. So this woman's a very early riser. She gets up before her husband. She reads the paper and drinks some coffee, and she gives her insulin. So of course, I had an immediate alarm bells go off in my mind, and I said, okay, we need to talk about this right now. You need to take your insulin, then eat. So I understand when patients have been doing something for years, it's really awkward to change. And so we really talked a lot about making the change of taking the insulin at 8 a.m. before the first meal, and they felt okay with that. Okay, look at this. Rest of day, patient takes insulin after meal. So another thing we want to really work on, finding out why do you take it after your meal, and is there any way you could take it before your meal? That would be a better match. As your food is digested and the blood sugars go up, your insulin will be working better if you take it before the meal. And the husband is, overseeing all of this. So here's our assessment. Given the situation, is this a realistic plan or is it too intensive? You've seen this before. The spouse is exhausted. He never gets to get away because he has to be with her to check her blood sugars 4 times a day and make sure she takes her insulin 4 times a day and writes it down. So the caregivers are getting exhausted. Is this a realistic plan? Can we maintain this? We want to keep things safe and don't make too many changes at once. And the patient is requesting a framework to adjust insulin based on blood sugars. And then, this is really interesting, when they're leaving, the husband mentions that the Apidra and Lantus are very expensive and they're having difficulty affording it. They're on a fixed income. And so we're not going to change things right now on this first visit. We're not going to switch them over to a cheaper insulin, but we're just going to do an assessment and, well, let's see what happens next. Here's a plan. So what I was talking about earlier, what A1C and blood glucose targets are realistic? Well, I said less than 8%, which means we want to drop the blood sugars by about 40 points overall, because 1% A1C is 30. So we want to drop it by a little bit more than 1%. And I have here, I put the pre-meal target I discussed with the patient, 100 to 140 before meals, not 80 to 130, because I want to make sure there's a big safety net and there's no hypoglycemia. Since this patient has dementia, I don't know if they can recognize hypo and effectively treat it. So I want to err on the side of caution. Keep checking blood sugars 3 to 4 times a day. And then what we decided to do was add a supplemental scale to the Apidra. So I asked the husband, is this something you want to try? And actually, I talked to the wife and I gave her the scale, which I'll show you in a minute, and I just gave her situations, and I'll tell you the situations I gave her. And she was able to accurately tell me how much insulin she should take. And we really want to reinforce this. Test, inject, eat. Tie. Test, inject, eat. Within 5 minutes of injecting insulin, right? So you want to test, inject, and eat your food right away. And then we just decided to only change one thing, only change the Apidra, give some more extra Apidra at meals, and keep the Lantus at night, and call with glucose results. So here's a scale that I wrote down for this patient. And so what I did, and this is a really great exercise if you want to find out if your patients understand what you're asking of them. And so I said, take your 5 units of Apidra before each meal, eat within 5 minutes of injection, add additional Apidra if blood sugar more than 150 C scale below. And look what I have here, less than 70, no insulin, eat sugary food. And we went over that a few times. But then what I said, I asked the patient, well, what if your blood sugar is 220 before breakfast? How much insulin would you take? And the patient was quiet for a moment, and they said, well, I would do 5 plus 2, 7 units. And then I said, well, what if your blood sugar was 68? What would you do? Okay, and they said, well, I wouldn't take the insulin. I'd eat some sugary food. And we went over many different examples so that I was 100% confident that both the patient and the spouse understood this. Very important. You guys, this is easy for us, but for our patients, it's scales are not easy to understand. But they had a lot of experience with insulin, and he asked me for this. He said, I want to know what to do if she's high, so I went in that direction. But I just made sure that both of them were able to understand it, and they were. Okay. So after 1 week, I called them last week and I said, how's it going? And this is the report they gave me. So before breakfast, okay, our target for before breakfast is 80 to 130. We never achieved that target. And that I know is because the Lantus dose was too low, 6 units of Lantus, but I didn't want to change it yet. But let's take a look at the rest of the day. You can see the blood sugar here, for example, 257, he took 8 units, the blood sugar went up to 425. Okay, well, they had an explanation for that. They went out to eat, and they didn't get their insulin until after they ate. Okay, so that I understood. Let's see this next day. 289, they took 8 units, and the blood sugar 220. So believe it or not, this was an improvement because they were running higher. They were running in the 300s a lot of the time. But I know from looking at this, we're still not giving enough insulin. And the Lantus is too low at night. But look at one very interesting thing. At dinner time, whatever the blood sugar was and however much they gave, their blood sugar usually was close to target. And so we don't want to mess with dinner because we want them to go to bed at night, you know, 110 to 180 to give them a nice safety net throughout the night. Okay, so we can tell here we need more insulin at breakfast and more insulin at lunch. And we need more Lantus. So here's the next step that we asked them to do. We said increase the Apidra to 6 units at breakfast and lunch. So we just went up one, keep adding the scale, and increase Lantus to 8 units. We know from our formula that they need a lot more Lantus than that, but we're just going to go gentle because of the situation. I mean, we'll probably need to get them up to 15 units of Lantus at night, but I'm just willing to go up 2 units a week to protect against hypoglycemia. Okay, but the other thing I'm really thinking about in the back of my mind is changing them to 70-30 insulin, twice a day injection. The husband is exhausted. It's a complicated regimen. Can we make this easier for them? So you may say to me, well, how do we figure out how much 70-30 they would need? And what is 70-30 insulin? So before we go through this calculation, I do want to ask you a question. What best describes 70-30 insulin? Is it 70% bolus and 30% basal? Is it 70% analog and 30% bolus? Is it 70% basal, 30% aerosolized? Or is it 70% basal, 30% bolus? What best describes 70-30 insulin? Or E, are you not sure? All right, thanks for voting, everybody. I appreciate it. Okay, take one more second. I'm going to go ahead and close the poll. One more second. Okay. And so 75% of you got this correct. 70-30 insulin means it's 70% basal, 30% bolus. It's a pre-mixed insulin. That is the right answer. Let me go ahead and hide this and just show you this slide. So I have patients who are on 75-25, which is a Humalog mix. It means it's 75% NPL. NPL is long-acting lispro. So it has a similar action to MPH. It works for about a half a day. This MPA is long-acting aspart. And so all of these insulins, which combine 70% basal and 30% bolus. So the first number is the percent basal. The second number is percent bolus. They need to be taken twice a day because they really just work for about 12 hours. And so we always give it before breakfast and before dinner. So let's go back to this patient. So I'm thinking about changing him to 70-30, and I know money's an issue, so I'll probably recommend the MPH and regular. It's the cheapest. You can get it for $25 a bottle from Walmart. So how do we figure out how much 70-30? Well, we can add up the total she takes a day, which is 30 units. Or we can base it on a weight calculation, which remember we said she needs about 35 units a day. But I always like to start conservative. So I'll just say she takes 30 units a day right now. And I know at 30 units she's in the 200. So I know it's not going to be too much insulin. And then you say give 2/3 in the morning and 1/3 before dinner. Where do I get this number from? From the ADA recommendations. That's what they say on their chart. So 2/3 of 30 units is 20 units in the morning, and 1/3 is 10 units before dinner. And if I was to do the math and figure out how many units of basal and how many units of bolus in that injection, that's what it works out to be. So we would start conservative and gradually increase to get to target. I think this would be the next best step for that patient. When their prescription of Lantus and Apidra runs out, let's move them over to some 70-30, make it easier. And with type 2 diabetes, they're not that insulin sensitive, so the 70-30 really works great for those patients. Easy to use, and we can get to target. All right. Thanks, you guys, for doing that. We have another case study, and this is our gentleman here, Rob. He's type 1 for 30 years. He's on insulin injections, Lantus, and Humalog. So Rob weighs 80 kilograms. His BMI is 23. He's not overweight. He's at a great weight, actually. Here's his insulin dosing: 22 units of Lantus in the morning, and Humalog before breakfast, 9 to 14 units, lunch 2 to 4 units, dinner 2 to 6 units, and bedtime 1 to 2 units of Humalog if he's over 200. He's not keeping a log of any type, and he's not counting carbs. He's just kind of ballparking. He doesn't have an endocrinologist. So I don't know if you've met patients like this who are just doing the best they can. He has had diabetes for a long time. And actually, when I look at this number, 6.7 A1C, I'm pretty darn impressed because he's been managing it on his own. So I know Rob is doing a lot right. And so that's the number one thing I want to say to him, because he has avoided meeting with diabetes educators. He's avoided meeting with doctors around his diabetes. He's been kind of gun shy. And so we want to give him a lot of love for everything he's doing right off the bat. Number one, he's checking 4 to 8 times a day. Number two, he's giving himself 4 injections a day, if not more. And he's involved with his diabetes. So he's come to us for help and support, and we're going to give it to him. And so the first thing I'm going to do, again, is figure out how much insulin does he really need based on his body weight. So I'm going to take his 80 kilograms times 0.5. He needs about 40 units a day of insulin. And then if we divide it 50% basal, that would be 20 units of basal. And then bolus is the other 20 units. So remember, he's on 22 units of Lantus a day, so he's really close on the Lantus dose. Bolus dose, if you take 20 units divided by 3 meals, it's 7 plus 6 plus 6. And here's what he's on: 14, 4, 4, and 6. But he tells you, "I'm really insulin resistant in the morning." Well, he doesn't use those words, but what he says is, "I need a lot of insulin in the morning or else my blood sugars go really high." And then he goes, "Well, at lunch and dinner, I take a lot less. For some reason, I don't need as much." So am I going to trust the formula, or am I going to trust this patient? I'm going to trust the patient. He's had type 1 for 30 years. Nobody knows his diabetes like he knows his diabetes. So I'm going to go with him. Okay. And so just in my mind, I do this calculation, and I just kind of compare his insulin needs. And I'm thinking, well, maybe we could do something more like 20 units of Lantus, 10 units of bolus at breakfast, 4 at lunch, 4 at dinner. That's what I'm just thinking in the back of my mind. So I don't tell him that. I'm just kind of contemplating. This patient adjusts insulin down if he's active at work, and he does have a very physical job. And he starts to feel hypoglycemia around 60 to 70. So this is really good. For a type 1 who's had diabetes for 30 years, I'm really feeling reassured that he feels low blood sugar around 70. Sometimes he goes, "It takes me till 60," but that tells me he does not have hypoglycemia unawareness. It tells me he still gets the epinephrine glucagon response. He can feel low. That's reassuring, very reassuring. But the thing he does say is, "I don't always have snacks in my car when I'm driving." So we had a long talk about that. I'm like, you always have to have snacks in your car in case you go low. So what I did is I asked him, "Can you keep a blood glucose log for 1 week?" And I even said, "Would you be willing to, get the download cable for your meter so you could download the results to your computer?" He wasn't that excited about that, but he said, "I'll try and keep a log." And we also said, "Let's try and prevent hypos as much as possible." So day before the appointment, his wife remembered that he was supposed to keep a log. So she took his meter and wrote all of his blood sugar results. And anytime somebody downloads from a meter, it's always difficult to sort out because it's the most recent day first, and then it goes backward from there. But the wife also circled numbers she was concerned about. So what is this telling us about the patient? Well, I'm going to tell you what it told me. It told me, A, he's got great social support, and B, he did return for his appointment even though he didn't keep a log, and even though the night before he just, his wife wrote these blood sugars down. So it tells me he's got great support and that he is interested in his diabetes. So I'm very thrilled about this piece of paper, but I also am concerned. We see here that on Saturday at 11:52, he went down to 69. 10:52, he went down to 69. Midnight, he's 46. He's up here 2:53 on this day, and at 8:22 in the morning, he's at 59. Here's a 2:31. Here's a 68 and a 52. So he's getting some lows later in the evening, and he's also getting some lows in the morning. And if you could look at the next day, you would see that he had a lot of lows around 9 a.m. But the other thing he mentioned is that he had a cold right here, so he was sick, so his blood sugars were running higher than normal. And so I know that about him, that his A1C is 6.7, so normally he's got pretty decent control. So we did some more talking, and I was asking him about his lows that he was getting around 9 a.m. and his lows after dinner. And here's what he told me. So I'm getting more and more information as I keep meeting with him. He was saying he takes about 12 units of insulin before breakfast, and then he checks his blood sugar right after breakfast, and if it's high, and I said, "What's high to you?" Well, he said more than 140. He takes another 2 units of bolus insulin. So he would take 12 units of Humalog, and then he would check his blood sugar an hour after eating, and if it was still above 140, he'd take another 2 units. And he did the same thing at dinner time. Because, and I asked him, "Why are you doing that?" And he goes, "I'm just worried about complications. I don't want to get any diabetes complications." And so here he was trying his best to avoid complications, but what was the problem was is that he was what we call stacking his insulin. And that was, it helped me understand why he was getting lows around, 10 in the morning, because he would take his insulin very early in the morning around 6 a.m., check his blood sugar around 7 a.m., give an additional 2 units, and he would crash at 8 to 9 in the morning, and he, because he was very active in his job. So we talked a lot about stacking, and could you just try to take that one dose of bolus insulin before your meal and see how what that does to your blood sugar? Would you be willing to try that and just take, the 4 injections a day, 3 of the Humalog and then 1 of the Lantus? And then I asked him, would you be willing to keep a detailed log for 1 week and include insulin dose and the carbs eaten? And we also decided that maybe that Lantus 20 units in the morning was too much. Let's back off a little bit on the basal and go to 18. And that was actually his idea because he felt like 20 was too much. And then we said, let's try carb counting. He hadn't really carb counted that much, but I asked him, would you be willing to start looking at some labels? And really based on him, he said, in the old days when I used to carb count, I would do 1 unit for every 10 grams of carbohydrate at breakfast. So as I mentioned, people often tend to be more insulin resistant in the morning and less insulin resistant later in the day. So we decided let's do 1 unit for every 10 grams carbohydrate in the morning and lunch and dinner, 1 unit for every 15 grams. And then we said, we also talked about low blood sugar. And he was saying that sometimes when his blood sugar is less than 70, he can kind of feel it, but he doesn't always treat it. He's busy and he's distracted and he waits till it gets really low. And so we talked a lot about maintaining your ability to sense hypoglycemia. And I was, saying that the more hypoglycemia you get, the less able you are to feel it over time. And so you might want to really consider trying to keep your blood sugars above 70 and treating right away to maintain your sense of hypoglycemia. And I did say to him that the sensation of hypoglycemia is a gift. So you want to keep that gift going so that you can always sense hypoglycemia for the duration, during your lifetime. It's just such an important ability to sense those lows. So let's just talk a little bit about prandial coverage or carbohydrate coverage. You want to match the insulin to the carbohydrate. 1 unit for every 10 to 15 grams is a common starting point. And this patient has 2 different ones, 1 unit for 10 grams in the morning and 1 unit for 15 at lunch and dinner. But then you also want to give yourself a correction bolus for hyperglycemia. And then you adjust the ratios depending on the response. So let's just take a look. Before you take insulin, bolus insulin, before a meal, you want to ask yourself, or the patient wants to ask themselves, 3 questions. How much carbohydrate am I going to eat? That's the number one question. And how much insulin should I take, of course? But then this is really important. Should I lower the dose because I have been very active or my blood sugar is too low? So have I been active recently, or am I currently active? Should I take a little bit less? So there's a lot that goes into this with a person with type 1 diabetes. They have to consider not only what they're going to eat, but also their activity level and what their blood sugar is at that moment. So for example, our patient Rob, he's going to eat 60 grams of carbohydrate with his rice Chex, 12 grams with his milk, and he has black coffee. So he's going to eat about 70 grams of carbohydrate, and he's going to take 1 unit for every 10. So he's going to take 7 units of insulin to cover the 70 grams. He takes 1 unit for every 10. So he's going to take 7, you can look down here, here's a chart that they could use, 7 units for his carbohydrates, but now he checks his blood sugar and he sees his blood sugar is 165. So does he need to adjust his insulin because he's above his target? Yes, he does have to adjust his insulin. But let's just take a look at this and we'll talk about adjusting in a minute. So he came back after a week and he had this beautiful chart and I asked, whose writing is this? He's like, it's my writing. So I was very impressed. And of course, you're going to give him a lot of, encouragement and support for doing this hard work. So he took 18 of Lantus and he took 13 units of Bolus. He had 100 grams of carbohydrate. So remember I was saying we're trying to do 1 unit for every 10 grams of carbohydrate, but instead he took 13 units. And what happened at lunch? Well, his blood sugar went to 45. So that was some good information for him that maybe I don't need that much bolus insulin at breakfast. Let's take a look at the next day. The next day he took 20 units of Lantus and 10 units of Humalog for 70 grams of carbohydrate. Okay, so we had talked about 1 unit for every 10 grams of carb. For some reason, he took 10 units instead of 7, and look what happened. His blood sugar went to 39. So he had some candy. This is at 9 a.m. Okay, what happens the next day? So the next day, he takes 18 units of Lantus. He dropped his Lantus, and he said, at 70 grams of carb, so he took 8 units of Humalog. So we were supposed to take 7, he took 8. We're not sure, what was happening there, but that was an improvement. He wasn't overdosing. And then look what he saw. He came in at 70, so that's a little bit better. So every day here, he kind of, if we go down to this day, he took 9 units, and then by this day, he was down to 7 units of Humalog. And so he's running now between 7 and 9 units of Humalog to try and prevent that blood sugar from going low between breakfast and lunch. He identified that maybe he's taking too much insulin before breakfast, and he wants to take a little bit less, and also he determined that he needs a snack at 9 a.m. A few other things I want to point out is that he had some 45s in the evening here, a 65 in the evening, and look what he had, 2 vodka tonics. So number one thing we're going to say is great job writing down alcohol intake. And we had a long talk about alcohol because, as you know, alcohol can cause hypoglycemia. And so we said it, for every drink you have, you need to eat 15 grams of carbohydrate. And when you get home, after you have a few drinks, you don't want to take a bunch of fast-acting insulin, even if your blood sugar is a little bit high. Cut that way back because alcohol can cause low blood sugar. So this 1 week of record keeping was very fruitful and successful. So our plan and our goal was to keep detailed log for 1 week. He did that. He was successful. Decrease Lantus to 18, he did that. Try not to stack Humalog. He did stop doing that, and he just tried to cover for his carbohydrates. He's experimenting, so he had success. Counting carbs, we had some success. We need a little bit more, so we made sure he's going to see the dietitian. And when blood sugar is less than 70, don't wait, treat. He still needed a little bit of work on that. So some of the next steps for this patient was to put the alarm on the phone to eat the snack at 9 a.m. So he came up with that. Like he said, oh, he's busy at work, so to take a snack, he'll put an alarm. And if drinking alcohol, 15 grams for every drink. And then he started talking about an insulin pump. I was so excited because when we first met, he was really not interested in taking an insulin pump or being on an insulin pump. He was just like, no, I'm fine with shots. But now he was getting more interested in it. And he was also talking about continuous glucose monitoring. So we had a really great conversation about that. The next step we said, now that he's carbohydrate counting, now we need to figure out a rule for him to cover for hyperglycemia. So when blood glucose above 130 pre-meal, we just kind of set that target high to protect against hypoglycemia. We said, let's add a correction bolus using the 1700 rule. And that means he would take 1 unit for every 45 points above his target and come back to visit. So I want to talk a little bit about the insulin sensitivity calculation. So we know what his carb ratio is, but now the next step would be to figure out, you know, for him, we went in a stepwise approach. How much insulin do you need if your blood sugar is above your target of 130? So a very commonly used rule, and this is a rule used by the American Association of Clinical Endocrinology, is a 1700 rule. And what it says is that how do you figure out how much 1 unit of insulin will drop your blood sugar? Well, you take 1700 divided by your total daily dose of insulin, and that will give you your sensitivity. This number 1700 is just a mathematical calculation to figure out how much insulin, how much 1 unit of insulin will drop your blood sugar. So when we divided that, we found out that he takes 40 units of insulin a day divided by 1700 equals 42.5. We rounded up to 43. So 1 unit of insulin drops his blood sugar, and we kind of rounded up for safety, 45 points. That's his correction. So we know in addition to covering for carbohydrate, he'll take 1 unit for every 45 points above his target of 130. So insulin coverage equals carb coverage plus correction to get your total mealtime bolus dose. So Rob, if Rob's blood glucose is 68 before eating, what is the best insulin adjustment strategy? Would he take the bolus insulin 1/2 hour after eating? Would he reduce his usual bolus insulin dose by 1 unit? Would he eat 30 grams of carb and eat his meal? Or would he decrease his PM basal? What's the best strategy? I'm going to launch this poll. And tell me what you think would be the best strategy for Rob. Kathleen asked a really good point about this patient. Did he want a snack at 9 a.m. or did he feel he had to have a snack? Could he just change his breakfast carbohydrate ratio to 1 to 15? That's a great question. He wanted to have that snack at 9 a.m. and so we went with that. But in the future, if he wants to eliminate that snack, maybe we could change the ratio to 1 to 15. That's a great question, Kathleen. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and close this poll. Thanks for voting, everybody. And what is the best answer? Well, 30% of you, or I'm sorry, 100% of you got this answer right. That is, you reduce the bolus, usual insulin bolus dose by 1 unit. And let me just show you a little chart that I've posted here. So correction bolus for Rob, he's going to take coverage for carbs, but also he covers hyperglycemia. 1 unit for every 45 points above 130. So if his blood sugar is less than 70, we're going to subtract 1 unit. If it's 70 to 130, he doesn't add any additional insulin to his carbohydrate coverage. But if his blood sugar is 130 to 175, he'll add 1 unit to the carb coverage. Two, three, and it goes on like that. So this is a handy little chart that you would create for a patient based on their insulin sensitivity and how much additional insulin they need to add to their carbohydrate coverage. This sometimes is called a correction scale, supplemental scale. It has different names, but it's based on their sensitivity to insulin, and everybody has their own unique sensitivity. I'm just going to do one more example, and then we'll wrap up. I know it's almost 1 o'clock, but I don't want to not cover this, so I'm going to go ahead and keep going. So if you can't stay, please know this course will be recorded. You can listen to it later, but I do want to cover some more information, so I'll just go ahead and keep talking because this is a new presentation. I'm not sure if it would take an hour and a half or more like an hour and 45 minutes. And I think it's going to require a little bit extra time because I don't want to rush through this very important material. So I'm going to go ahead and keep going. And if you need to leave, I understand, but know that this is going to be recorded and available to you in your student center so you can listen to it anytime. So adjusting Rob's bolus insulin with ratios. So Rob plans to eat 70 grams of carbohydrate and his blood sugar before breakfast is 165. So let's just go over this together. For his carb coverage, he takes 1 unit for every 10 grams of carbohydrate. He's going to eat 70 grams of carbohydrate. So 70 grams divided by 10, he needs 7 units of insulin to cover his carbs. Now the correction scale, his blood sugar is 165, his target's 130. So he's 35 over his target, and based on that scale that we saw yesterday, if he's, you know, his blood sugar was 165, you can see he takes 1 unit of insulin, or you could use his math equation. So he's 35 over target, he takes 1 unit. So he takes 7 units of bolus to cover carbs in his meal and 1 unit to cover hyperglycemia. So his total adjusted dose is 8 units. Now I'd like you to fill in the blanks. What if his blood sugar before breakfast is 175 and he plans to eat 80 grams? How much insulin would he need to cover that? So if you want, you can put me on pause if you're listening to the recorded version. I'm just going to go ahead and do this together. So his blood sugar before breakfast is 175. His target's 130. He's 45 over target. So he needs 1 unit to cover for hyperglycemia. And he's going to eat 80 grams of carbohydrate. He takes 80 grams divided by 10 because he takes 1 unit for every 10 grams of carb. So he needs 8 units just to cover his carbohydrates. So 1 unit to correct for hyperglycemia, 8 units to cover the carbs in his meal. He needs 9 units of insulin to get his blood sugars to target. So that's how we figure that out. And so there is a lot of math involved in diabetes management, but so you want to judge where your patient is at. You know, are you just happy they're taking their insulin a few times a day, or are they ready for this more complex information? When I first met with Rob, he was not ready for this. We just had to get to a place where he was taking his insulin on a regular basis and not over insulinizing himself, and then over time we could get to this place. So we want to, you know, go with where the patient is at and really move with them. And Don Dicker says, sorry Don, can we just use the chart? Sure, you could use the chart. So I'm just saying, if you don't have the chart with you, you could do this math. So you could use the charts, absolutely, that would be way easier. But if a person needs to kind of look and see what they need, if they don't have their charts available, I want them to understand what goes into those charts too. I want to do another example with you. I think this is really important. We have a patient, Mr. R, and he's in the hospital. How much insulin does he need based on his presentation? And so I keep talking about this 0.5 units of insulin per kilogram, but this may not be the right dose for all of our patients. I want to take a look at this gentleman. His creatinine is 1.6. So we know the kidneys are responsible for clearing used insulin. And if his creatinine is elevated, I know that the insulin might hang around a little bit longer. So I'm already cautious. He's 76 years old. He's being admitted to a hospital. He's not very hungry. He's very lean. His body weight is 80 kilograms, and he's on Glucotrol 5 milligrams at home. So what is Glucotrol? Glucotrol is a sulfonylurea, and the max dose is 40 milligrams. He's at 5, a very low dose, and his A1C is really close to target at 7.2. As a matter of fact, for his age, I'm really happy with an A1C of 7.2, especially given his kidney function and his risk for hypoglycemia. So how do we figure out his insulin dose when he's in the hospital? Because, you know, when patients go to hospitals, we stop their oral medications and we start them on insulin. Well, we're not going to say 80 times 0.5 for him. It would be too much insulin. Based on the unique characteristics of our patients, where would we start? And we know that insulin dosing is based on their weight, their age, their creatinine. And if the patient is older, thin, elderly, we're going to start at a much less aggressive dosing strategy than if they're just, you know, a person with type 1 diabetes and very healthy, or a person over here who's very obese or overweight or on steroids or has an infection. So for this particular patient, I'm not going to start them on 0.5 units. I'm going to say, let's start on 0.3 units of insulin per kilogram. So that 80, his body weight of 80 times 0.3 is 24 units a day. Half of that is going to be basal, 12 units. The other half is bolus, the other 12 units, divided by 3 meals. So it's 4 units each meal. Okay, now, so they're in the hospital. We take them off their glucotrol. We put them on insulin. This will be the max dose of insulin I'd really like to see them on. And then what if that patient is nauseated and you're not sure if they're going to eat? In that situation, you definitely want to consider giving the insulin after the meal, to make sure that they are going to eat their carbohydrates. And we also may want to make a special recommendation to the staff to say, you know what, if they're not eating, let's cut the insulin in half, or base the amount of insulin we give on the amount of food that they eat. So we may want to even go further as advocates to say we need to really customize for this patient, and we might need to give insulin after a meal based on how much they eat. This is such an important concept. I had a patient in the hospital the other day who weighed 70 kilograms, and they were on 60 units of Lantus a day, and they were very lean. And of course, not unexpectedly, their blood sugars were running, you know, in the 50s in the morning. So we need to take a look at each patient individually. Let's just wrap up with this last concept. What if the patient's on more than 200 units a day? So as you know, an insulin syringe, the biggest insulin syringe holds 100 units, right? The U100 1cc insulin syringe. So if you're on more than 100 units a day, or 100 units a shot, what do you do? You have to fill up one syringe with 100 units and another syringe with, you know, another 20 units. It's very upsetting for patients to have to take that much insulin. So there is this strategy we can use if they're on more than 200 units a day to convert them over to U500. And U500, here's regular insulin, here's U500. It has a very different label. It has this red pattern on it, diagonal pattern, and it says U500. And it does say concentrated. It says warning, high potency, not for ordinary use. So just by looking at that, you can see that U500 can be dangerous, because U500 is 5 times more potent. It's 5 times the strength of U100. It's 5 times as concentrated. So if I were to pull up 1 unit of U500 on a U100 syringe, so most of our syringes now are U100 based on the U100 insulin bottle and measurement. If I was to pull up 1 unit of U500 on the U100 syringe, that would equal 5 units of insulin, right? If I drew up 2 units of U500 on this U100 syringe, that it would equal 10 units of insulin. This insulin is 5 times more potent. So we need to be very cautious. So that's the drawback, that it is 5 times more potent. If not used correctly, you could easily over-insulinize somebody and cause severe hypoglycemia. But the great thing about U500 is that U500 has both bolus and basal action. So you don't need to give basal insulin. You just use the U500. That's the only insulin you need. And initially, generally speaking, we'll give it twice a day. We'll take the total daily need and split it into 2 doses, 60% in the morning and 40% in the evening. And if we do 3, we'll do 40, 40, and 20. We'll divide it up that way. But I think it's a real benefit of U500 is that that's the only insulin you use. Now, there's 500 units per milliliter, and there's 20 units in a vial. So each vial of U500 has 10,000 units. And so even though it costs $400 a vial, it tends to be more cost effective because you use less insulin in the long run. So it's expensive, But since you just have this one insulin, it tends to be more cost effective. This is a very dangerous insulin if not used carefully, so we definitely need to monitor it and educate the patient and the staff, especially if a patient comes in on U-500 and they're admitted to the hospital. We have to be very cautious. And here's what I have is if this is your dose of U-500, this is what you would fill up a U-100 syringe. You would fill it up to 5 units, and this is what you would fill a tuberculin syringe. So many times in hospitals, they'll actually use a tuberculin syringe to draw up U-500 because the tuberculin syringe is based on volume, and so it tends to have less errors associated with it. So if I'm on U-500 50 units, I would draw up in a U-100 syringe 10 units, or in a tuberculin syringe, you can see I would go to that rate right there, which I can't see on my screen right now. Hang on. Okay, to 0.1. And so that's how it goes. If I need 100 units of U-500, that's 20 units on a U-100 syringe or 0.2 on a tuberculin. So that is how the hospital or the pharmacy generally would pre-draw the insulin for a patient in the inpatient setting. But on the outpatient setting, the patient may be using the U-100 syringe. So what I would say, and the FDA is asking the manufacturers of U-500, is please make a U-500 syringe so we can use it for the U-500 insulin. So let's just do an example together. If a patient is on a total dose of 250 units a day of the U-100, what would they need as far as U-500? So we take the 250 units a day and divide it by 5. So if they go to U-500, they only need 50 units a day of insulin. That is such a big difference to go from 250 to 50 units. We'd give 2/3 in the morning, which is 30 units, and 1/3 in the evening, which is 20 units of U-500. And then we gradually increase as needed, and some patients actually take it 3 times a day. And so that is how you would do that. What about if they're on 300 units a day? Well, you divide that by 5, you get 60 units of U-500. 2/3 in the morning is 36, and 1/3 in the PM is 24 units of U-500. And so that's a much more palatable dose for patients to take. And they can even, a lot of patients, even though it's off-label, are using U-500 in insulin pumps too. So I hope that was a helpful review of insulin pattern management gone crazy. We looked at patients with type 2 diabetes, type 1 diabetes. We looked at insulin calculation based on weight, or looking at insulin calculation based on carbohydrate and correction scale. And we also took a look at U-500. So I want to thank you so much for joining me. I'm going to go ahead and turn off the recording version, but I will stay for any additional questions that you might have after we turn off the recording button. So I will be here afterward, after I stop recording, to answer any questions. And if those of you listening to the recorded version have any questions, you're always free to email me and I will get back to you. So this is Beverly Tomasian signing off. Thank you so much for joining us.